Thanks very much, Stephen, and thanks for the opportunity. David showed you where the basin was, so I don't need to bother. Just to bring you up to date with the current governance structure that we've got in the Murray-Darling Basin, James mentioned that we're moving to a single federal authority before Christmas, but this is the current structure and shows you a rather complicated administrative process that things have to go through. Now today what I want to do is just focus on one of the Commission's programs rather than give you a list of things that we've been doing, which is quite substantial. I really wanted to put one program in context so you can see some of the detail. This just shows you the sort of history of the River Murray Waters Commission, which was set up in 1914 after the three states and the Commonwealth negotiated the River Murray Waters Agreement over about a 22-year period. You can see as we go through, it's been getting better. This last one only took a couple of years to negotiate. Again, you can see the evolution in actions of the focuses, I guess, of the organisations from a sort of pro-development organisation to recognition you needed to go from the river to the basin, to recognition there that, you know, we were suffering from environmental degradation. We really needed to look at the issue of diversions, the fact that they were unsustainable, and take a more holistic approach. So the Murray-Darling Basin Commission agreed a program called the Living Murray, which both James and David have mentioned, and really this was about recovering environmental water, water for the environment along the Murray, and focusing it on six icon sites along the Murray. They're shown here. Basically they're important environmental assets, the Lower Lakes, Barramilla Forest, the world's largest red gum forest, Hatter Lakes, Chowler, and the River Murray Channel. Now, all governments, and David mentioned the New South Wales contribution, all governments along the Murray, including the Commonwealth, agreed to put funding in to recover that environmental water, $500 million to recover 500 gigalitres, so you'd have 500 gigalitres or up to available every year. And the Commission had some money, a couple of hundred million dollars, to put in place infrastructure at those sites to give the best delivery of that water, get the maximum bang for your buck in terms of water available. And then the Commonwealth Government provided the Commission with extra money, which would enhance the water recovery program, and extra money which would enhance the building the structure. So we had about $1 billion to use to recover the 500 gigalitres and to apply it to those icon sites. Now that agreement, I suppose, took the best part of a decade to negotiate, so you can see we have got better over time. Each of these icon sites, and this shows you the Barramilla Forest, which, as I mentioned, is a significant red gum forest. Each of those environmental sites has specific objectives set out for its to be achieved under the Living Murray program at that site. And the particular ones for the Barramilla Forest for this first step of the Living Murray are successful breeding of thousands of colonial water birds in at least 3 years out of 10, and healthy vegetation in at least 55% of the area, and including a range of ecological ecosystems. So we have a number of elements to this Living Murray program. The first, of course, is recovering the water for the environment. And we're doing that in a number of ways. The first one is infrastructure improvements, obviously fixing, you know, leaky channels, piping systems to save evaporation or transmission losses. So that was the initial focus of the water recovery program. One of the other elements is changing how lakes and storages are operated by changing the level of the water held behind a weir, you can end up flooding anabranches and wetlands that haven't been flooded for some time. And the third strand, which we've focused on in recent years, is actually purchasing water from those who wish to sell it. We are well on the way to recovering water. Right now, there's over 500 gigalitres of water projects on the books for work. We've already recovered 133 gigalitres, so we have that available to apply, subject to getting allocations for that 133 gigalitres. Some additional water will come to be able to be used in the next couple of months. So we're well on the way to recovering that 500 gigalitres by June next year, which is the deadline. The next strand of the program is actually putting these structures in place so that we can use a smaller amount of water in each of these sites to deliver the same environmental objectives. So the sorts of things we're putting in place are regulators on wetlands so we can let water in, and instead of having to constantly replace it to replace evaporation, we can let it dry out naturally as it would if the river operated under its normal conditions. We can change the flow path of water by putting in banks. One of the major programs we have along the River Murray Channel is, you'll be aware that historically a lot of logs were taken out of the and snags were taken out of the River Murray to improve navigation and water flow. Having taken them out, like most of these things, the pendulum swings, and we're busy putting them back in because they provide habitat for native fish and they make an environment much more conducive to native fish than the sort of free flow muddy channel that carp like. So we've got a major program re-snagging parts of the river. Also, by putting dams and weirs along the river, we manage to create barriers to fish so they, basically they can't leap over a weir. So we've put fishways that are really adapted to native Australian fish along the Murray River. So we're going to have fishways all the way from the Murray mouth to the Hume Dam in the next couple of years. They will all be finalised. What we've also been doing in recent times is doing a fair amount of modelling for each of these icon sites, trying to work out what's the best combination of infrastructure at that site with water availability. So how do you make sure with this 500 gigalitres we can use that water repeatedly at those sites as it goes along the Murray? What's the best infrastructure and water combination, and how would you use the water to achieve the objectives at each of the sites, achieve the maximum number of objectives right throughout the system, and what sort of infrastructure do you need to achieve that, particularly looking at, say, large pieces of infrastructure rather than, a bunch of little regulators here and there. So we've been developing these interim blueprints and putting the modelling together and looking at the proposed structures, and we have come up with a plan which will deliver major infrastructure at four of those icon sites along the river, and provide water which will meet the objectives set up for those sites. It doesn't include the Lower Lakes Coorong because we've obviously got other work going on in the Lower Lakes, and we're still looking at how to deal with Barmamillawa. But really it's a major program of modelling and infrastructure which we're well on the way to starting to deliver. Just to give you an example of the sorts of things that we can do, this is the Barmamillawa forest again, the red gum forest that I mentioned. And a couple of years ago, we did have some water available, and the black line along there shows you the capacity of the channel to hold water. What the blue line shows you is the actual volumes of water that were available. And so you can see this is natural water available. There was a slight flood, so the amount of water available in the flood went up to, increased to 30,000 megalitres a day. And you can see it started to come down, and the red dotted line is where what would have happened with that water if we hadn't added any environmental water to that little flood. So by adding about 500 gigalitres of environmental water, you can see where the blue line ended up going. So it increased the volume and extended the duration of the flood, which was really good. We ended up flooding 57% of the floodplain. We got a favourable response from birds and fish and various other organisms in the Barmamillawa forest, and generally it was a very successful environmental watering. And this just shows you that top left is Moira grass habitat, top right is great egret chicks breeding, red gum forest getting wet, and we had unprecedented fish spawning of golden perch and silver perch and Murray cod, which we hadn't had before and was unexpected. We report every year to Ministerial Council, and we have a bunch of independent auditors who go around and collect the information from each state, reviewing what every state has done to see if they're meeting their targets under the Living Murray program, and that goes as an independent report to the Ministerial Council and is published every year. So what are the things that work in terms of getting this right? Well, in the Commission, for anything to happen, there has to be unanimous decision-making. Now, that's slow to achieve in the beginning, but once you get it, the decisions stick. You really need to have the clear objectives that the states can agree on, or jurisdictions can agree on, and proper monitoring and reporting. we really have to clarify the roles of the Commission Office, the states and the jurisdictions in terms of who does what. If we do that, it works. Given that every state is looking over the shoulder of every other state and us, there are fairly robust processes in place. All the jurisdictions having skin in the game is really important to achieve objectives. Without money, there's generally not the same level of commitment, and there does need to be adequate resourcing, and we believe independent review works pretty well, and putting a bit of effort into trying to maximise inter-jurisdictional cooperation, I think it helps the progress quite a bit. Thank you.